and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Independence Day weekend. I hope the 4th of July is going well for you. We're going to talk this evening about fascism. Now, this is one of those subjects that you'll hear people talk, use the term fascist, fascism, and you often, if you're like me, wonder, what in the world are they talking about? A picture in my mind emerges of Mussolini or Adolf Hitler. But does fascism still exist today? And if so, how and where? Fascism grew up at the height of the age of modernism, and it was defeated militarily at World War II. But if it's still with us today, how does fascism and postmodernism, how do those two go together? We're going to be talking about all of that here during this hour of Issues Etc. Our guest, Dr. Gene Edward Veith. He's culture editor for World Magazine, director of the Cranach Institute, and author of several books, including Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Modern Fascism, The Threat to the Judeo-Christian Worldview. Dr. Veith, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Nice to be with you again.
We're going to get into the subject of fascism in a broad way, define it, and then we're going to talk about it historically and contemporarily. But where do you see fascism in the world today?
Well, what we're dealing with right now in the war on terrorism is a war against fascism. Saddam Hussein and his Ba'ath Party that ruled Iraq and that still rules Syria and still has a very big following in the Arab world literally is a fascist party that developed out of the 40s. It's Arab fascism. And Saddam Hussein is exactly in his ideology as well as his practices in that tradition of Hitler, Mussolini, and others. But the Islamic fascism, you'll see this described, commentators, some of them are using the term Islamofascism, which is a very precise and accurate description of their philosophy. It's an Islamic fascism that seeks to create this perfect Islamic state in this world, and that acknowledges no transcendent moral law to restrict what they're willing to do to people. So we're still fighting fascism, very literally. Now, fascism is used as a term of insult, and it's used as a term to describe conservatives, of all things. And that was really from the influence of the left wing and Marxism after the war. But fascism is not conservative at all. It's a particular kind of radical ideology that is still with us, and it's with us in not only those overt literal fascism that the terrorists and Saddam Hussein exemplify, but the postmodernist thought that's so common today, the idea that truth is relative, that the truth is a construction of the will, that morality is nothing more than an imposition of power, and all these things that we've dealt with, that can be traced in a direct, literal line back through the fascist philosophers of the 30s and the 20s and in the origins in the thought of Friedrich Nietzsche, who is an important thinker for both the fascist movement and is very much in vogue in universities today.
Let's see if we can draw a circle around this term so that we can kind of get our mind around a simple definition of fascism. Break it down into its elements. How would you define it?
Well, and it's hard to give a simple definition because it's a whole worldview, really. Think of it as an attempt to make culture and politics and religion and ethics and economics all one, to unify life so that your country is your religion, your culture is your religion, your economy is centered not just on private property but on the needs of the people as a whole. So you can break it down in the economic theory of fascism is called a national socialism, which means that private property is allowed, but it must be used, but the economy is controlled by the state for the good of the whole. Now that's National Socialism, and again, you look at the attempts of so-called liberal economics, where the government controls the economy, and that goes right back to the same economists who, back in Mussolini's time and the New Deal of Roosevelt, and that was very much modeled after what Mussolini was doing to get his country out of the Great Depression. But a fully realized National Socialism, it's different than Marxist socialism, because Marxist socialism is based on class struggle and the idea that the working class will rise up and overthrow the middle class and hold all property in common. The National Socialism is not based on conflict, but on kind of an enforced unity, and it allows for some free market manifestation, especially private property, but not the kind where people can do with their property whatever they want. It still is all controlled by the government. What we're seeing in China today, I would say, is national socialism. They've moved away from Marxism, but they have not moved to a free society or a free economy. They're taking advantage of a lot of things, and their economy is really growing, but it's really organized around a national socialist kind of model.
So
that's, yeah, in politics, the idea that there is nothing above the culture, that the culture creates its own realities, and so there's nothing above the leader and above the institutions of the society, kind of the desire to bring sort of the kingdom of heaven on earth, and then but rejecting any kind of transcendent truth above the culture, or a transcendent moral law above what that might limit what the political leaders are able to do.
What does fascism have to do with racism?
Well, the particular kinds of fascism that we associate with Hitler and others, of course, is tied in very closely to a racist view. And racism is part of the fascist ideology, and again, it had many forms and broke in just about every European country and beyond. It really goes back to Darwinism. The fascists rejected class struggle, but they believed that human beings were only animals, and that as animals, progress comes through the survival of the fittest and through the stronger defeating the weaker. And the fascists simply took Darwinism very literally and implemented it in their ideology and practices. And so they tended to see life in terms of a struggle, not between social classes, but between different groups of people, between different nationalities, between different ethnic groups, and between different races. And the most biological of the fascists would be, Hitler, the Nazi Party. And they saw the different races sort of like different species of humanity. And according to the tenets of evolution, progress comes through the victory of one species or of one race over the others. And so Hitler is a very consistent evolutionist, and his racism is grounded in those kind of racial theories, which at the time were broadly held, in this country. When you look at biology books from the 20s and the 30s, even in this country, you'll have a lot of this racial biology that goes right back to Darwin, and again, that Hitler turned into a keystone of his policies. But there are different races. I mean, there are different fascisms. Hitler looked at the Aryan people as as the master race, which the not just white people, but those who, he traced the lineage all the way back to India, which is where the real Aryan people were, sort of we call them the Indo-European people, the Indo-European languages that go from there, somewhere in India and through Central Europe and Northern Europe. That was the race he idealized, and he believed that not only is it superior, but that it must assert itself by destroying the weaker races, or not just the weaker races, the competitive races. For example, the Jews, it wasn't that they were weak, but that they were, he saw them as competing with not just the Indo-European race, but in their ideology, which was the true enemy of the fascist philosophy.
We're talking with Jean Edward Veith about fascism, both historic and today. Now, when we come back from this break, the real point, what did fascism do with Christianity? Was Christianity complicitous in the fascism of the 20s through the 40s? What does fascism have to do with paganism? We'll talk about all of that when we come back. Stay with us.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. We're talking about fascism with Dr. Jean Edward Veith. Ed, you're a former English professor. You are culture editor for World Magazine. Why is it important for Christians to read good books?
Well, when you read a book, what you're doing, you're tapping into somebody else's mind. You're going beyond just your own limited knowledge and perception, and you're able to tap into the ideas and the experiences and the imaginations of, whoever you want as you open a book. That's what reading is. And reading good books in particular can really expand a person's horizon. It can make their own thoughts and experiences stronger and better, because they're not just isolated. You're tied into some of the best minds and the best the best imaginers and the best theologians, and people who've known God in a very important way. And we can make all of that ours, really, by reading good books.
Folks, that's precisely why we have our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month Club. The book that we pick every month is picked on purpose to serve you as our listener, to help you get in contact with good books, with the great minds and the ideas and the thinking of the past and of the present. Now, our book of the month for July is Modern Fascism, The Threat to the Judeo-Christian Worldview, by our guest in this hour, Dr. Jean Edward Veith. You can browse before you buy this book on our website, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section. You'll find information on modern fascism. Or you can order it by calling Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. Their number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Modern Fascism is the name of the book by our guest, Dr. Jean Edward Veith. It's our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for July. Ed, let's talk about what fascism does with Christianity. First of all, dispel the myth that Christians were complicitous, that they found a happy home in the fascisms of the 30s and the 40s in Europe.
Well, that's just not true. I mean, it's true that the liberal church did. The liberals who wanted to throw out biblical authority, they did. But that whole liberal movement I show in the book comes out of a strain of Bible scholarship that was directly tied to the fascist project of purging Christianity of its Jewish element, as they put it. And by the Jewish element, that means the influence of the Bible. Now, Really, the best way to understand fascism is to see why they hated the Jews. It wasn't just a racial thing. What they objected to was what they saw as the Jewish influence in Western civilization. The idea that there is one God, there's only one God who's above the culture, above nature. They believe that view alienated human beings from nature and from their culture. They objected to this idea of a transcendent morality that is above and beyond the culture, by which the culture can be judged. They wanted a morality that comes from within, a morality that's a function of the will. And that they believe that this idea of a transcendent morality makes us feel guilty and makes us weak and inhibits us from expressing our natural urges. They also objected to the idea that, to everything that came out of that, rationalism, thinking objectively, the idea of individualism, the idea of democracy, all of these things they saw as being influenced by the Jewish presence, and they're very specific that all of those concepts, the idea of one God, the idea that nature is not divine, which they objected to that also, the idea that there's a higher moral law, that came from the Bible, which they saw as a Jewish document. And so the Nazis hated the Jews and tried to destroy the Jews, but it was also biblical Christianity, of course, believes those same things, and they were, it's interesting that the Nazis were very hostile to the Reformation, because the Reformation made the Bible central in a way that it had not been for a while. And so their real opposition is the Bible. And there were theologians, again, post-Enlightenment theologians, that and then the 19th century theologians, that had as their project to save Christianity by getting rid of the Bible. In other words, they wanted Christianity, they were okay with that as long as it was a cultural religion, a religion that sanctioned the status quo, that says, well, the government is sacred, so you can't criticize it, the land and the soil. And people, a lot of pagan religions, that's what they are. They sanctify, the culture and the current state of things. Christianity, of course, is very different. It always has standards by which we can even criticize our rulers and criticize our culture when it goes off base. But there were theologians who wanted to purge Christianity of its Jewish elements, and one way they did that was to discredit the Bible and to attack biblical authority. And there was a group of, they called themselves German Christians, the German Christian movement, which was not Christian at all, but it got power within the state churches, but their theology was very liberal. And when Hitler took power, the German Christians took over the state church, and one of the first actions they did was to vote to remove the Old Testament from the Bible, as part of their step to, Judaize the church. They were opposed, though, by what's called the confessing Christians, and the Christians who saw what was happening, who saw what fascism was doing, including to their church, saw that they had to rally around the confessions and the biblical faith. And so, although you had a wide range of people, theologians and Christians, coming to this, including some that we would consider not as orthodox as they should be, you had someone like Hermann Sasse, the great confessional Lutheran pastor and theologian and writer, who's very much a part of that, going to asserting the Bible, asserting the truths of historic Christianity as a way to counter and oppose, because the fascist ideology was directly opposed to every single tenet of historic Christianity.
Ed, we're going to take another break here. I want you to understand this, folks. Now, this is very important for understanding fascism, both historically and in its modern form. It chooses its enemy. And what is its enemy? Holy Scripture and Orthodox Christianity. Hitler was not only against the Jews because of their racial element, but he was against them because of the Bible, because they were part and parcel of the Old Testament, which is part of Holy Scripture, which is the foundation for Orthodox Christianity. Our guest, Dr. Gene Edward Veith, is the director of the Chronic Institute. It's a Lutheran voice in the public square. And you can check out the website for the Chronic Institute by visiting our website, issuesetc.org. Under the section titled Links with Regular Guests, you'll find a direct link to Dr. Gene Edward Veith and the Chronic Institute. Or you can call our Issues Etc. resource line, 1-800-737-0172. And we'll give you the phone number and mailing address for the Chronic Institute. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Gene Edward Veith on fascism. We're going to talk about the connection, the marriage between both fascism and paganism and fascism and postmodernism.
Fascism suffered a military defeat in World War II, but how are ideas like the disregard for moral objectivity, the exaltation of the state, and the employment of thought control still flourishing today? You can find out with our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, titled Modern Fascism, Liquidating the Judeo-Christian Worldview. It's written by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Gene Edward Veith. Modern Fascism is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about our Book of the Month on the web, issuesetc.org. Just click the What's New section. Richard John Newhouse writes, Modern fascism is sure to stir controversy and a careful rethinking of the culture, politics, and spiritual forces of our time. Modern fascism costs $17.99 plus shipping and handling. Modern fascism, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
To receive a free tape of this discussion with Dr. Gene Edward Veith on fascism, contact the local Lutheran church that sponsors Issues Etc. in your area, and they'll send you a free cassette recording of this hour's conversation. Get a pen and a piece of paper ready, because you should hear an announcement with a phone number and a mailing address for that sponsor right after the Issues Etc. close theme. Dr. Gene Edward Veith is our guest. Dr. Veith, before the break, we were talking about fascism and Christianity, and it sounded very strongly as though fascism has a much closer marriage with paganism than anything else when it comes to fascism and religious systems. Tell us about fascism and paganism.
Well, the fascists very much wanted to restore the pre-Christian paganisms into the contemporary world. Under the pagan worldview, your culture was at one with nature and was one with the gods. And so the king in a pagan society, or the chief, whoever the ruler is, was generally seen as a god. Being in ancient Egypt or in ancient Canaan, the king was seen as a god. And you couldn't question your king or couldn't criticize what he says because he was a god, and there's no larger frame of reference, no transcendent frame of reference beyond that. When you were told by your culture that you had to sacrifice your firstborn children, the thought was, that, well, you just had to do that. That's the way it was. But you had to do that to make the crops grow, for example. Because, again, the culture and the nature and religion, they're all tied together. And the fascist thinkers believed that this was a very healthy state of mind because human beings weren't alienated from each other or from themselves. They could express under a pagan center their natural urges, whether they're sexual urges or urges for violence, all of those things that are inside us. In the pagan religious system, those all had an important place. And the societies were unified. People agreed with each other. There weren't all the internal conflicts. There was usually war with other tribes. But again, they saw that as a healthy thing. But people felt unified. They were in harmony with nature. It's interesting, the fascists were some of the first of the modern environmentalists. And you trace the environmentalist movement, especially among some of the more radical kinds. It goes right through the environmental philosophies in Germany in the 30s. And again, the pagan idea where nature is divine, where your culture was divine, where in a sense you were divine in so much as you were part of the whole, that was very much the ideal of the fascist state. And that was what they saw in paganism, and that was what they wanted to restore today.
Fascism flourished during a time of modernism where science was, where truth was considered to be something that did exist, and science and reason were the ways, really the only ways in that modernist mindset to arrive at truth. But I want to talk about, in our contemporary setting, you said before that if you trace the roots of postmodern thought, where truth is not considered to exist by itself, but is just a construct of the human mind or of culture or of circumstance, if you trace the roots of that relativism back, you find they have the same roots of fascism. Tell us about that, the marriage between fascism and postmodernism.
Well, it's not so much a marriage, but almost the same family tree, because it had the same origins and even the same beliefs. I would say the most postmodernist thought really is identical to postmodernist or to fascist philosophy. The fascists were in many ways critical of the rationalism of the modernist time, and they believed in the importance of releasing the emotions. And they came to see that reality is a construction. Very much, well, it's the same thing that the postmodernists are saying. Nietzsche is a key figure in both fascism and modernism, and he had the concept of the will, that he talked about the triumph of the will, where what morality really involves is enforcing your will. Of course, today we have the pro-choice movement that sees morality as a matter of your will. If whatever you choose, that's right for you. It doesn't matter. There's no objective frame of reference to say an abortion is right or wrong. If it's what you choose and it's right for you, well, that's a fascist concept. Hitler had this great propaganda film by Leif Riefenstahl. He called it The Triumph of the Will, tying it right into Nietzsche. And the idea that there are weak people who just follow along with the crowd and who do what they're told, but then there are the strong who enforce their power on others. Again, postmodernist thinking talks about that cultures are nothing more but cultural values and moral values are nothing more than the imposition of power, of strong people, of whoever's in power imposing their beliefs, their constructions on others. And again, that comes from the Nazis. And the Nazis said, if that's the truth, then let's do it. And that explains a lot of what they were doing. But again, both reject any kind of objective truth, certainly any kind of objective moral truth. The reduction of things, a lot of postmodernists too think that every culture and every race often has its own realities, and and they reduce a lot of the question to racial kinds of issues. And again, that's what the fascists did, and that's where it comes from. But this whole, again, it's a worldview that believes in unleashing, you know, what's within, in rejecting, you know, any kind of objective restraints, in seeing reality as in terms of a cultural construction or a construction of the will. That's, I'm describing postmodernism. I'm also describing the statements of the fascist philosophers.
What kind of ethic, if we can even call it that, what kind of ethics comes out of fascism when truth and moral truth are considered to not just be relative, but to be based on something nothing more than human, culture?
Yeah, well, the ethic, you know, you throw out ethical truth and you add in the idea that it's healthy to unleash your natural desires. What you're going to have is something that turned into a nightmare very quickly, and that's exactly what it did. The fascist artist glorified violence in art and in literature and in film, and they believe that that's a natural feeling, and to unleash that is a good thing, and they believe that things, or Nietzsche talked about pity being a weakness. Having compassion on someone is a weakness. And so they very deliberately tried to stamp out any feelings of compassion they might have towards someone else. Of course, where you see it most dramatically was in the euthanasia movement in Germany under Hitler's regime, which started as an attempt to, well, even be compassionate, ironically, in that they showed a number of movies that came out where you had to feel sorry for the person who was suffering, and wasn't it a loving thing for their relatives to put them out of their misery. Books came out arguing for euthanasia. They give exactly the same arguments that the books coming out arguing for euthanasia are giving today. And the idea that there's some life that's not worth living, it's not worth preserving. And it started with a program to euthanize severely handicapped children. And that got started, but it kept growing. And so they started to euthanize the elderly. And it kept growing, and they started to euthanize the mentally handicapped. And they opened euthanasia centers in the concentration camps that at first were work camps mainly, but they started to euthanize those prisoners who were too weak to work, and then, or who were too sick to work. And, of course, after a while, that just grew and grew and grew until they were trying to euthanize everyone, if you could use that term. And the technologies that they developed with the gas chambers and everything else, that was what grew out of the medical euthanasia movement. And when you look at the anti-life position that's become so accepted in our culture today, the acceptance of abortion, and now euthanasia, and now we have states that are promoting doctor-assisted suicide, and it just the steps are exactly the same as what happened in Germany under the Nazis, and the arguments are exactly the same, and we need to be careful lest the results are going to be exactly the same.
Now, that leads me to the question that will occupy the last part of our conversation with Dr. Jean Edward Veith on fascism, historic and modern. I look at our culture today, our American culture, in many ways, you got to wonder, are we ripe for fascism? We talked about Islamofascism, and people are worried about that. They're rightly labeling it for what it is. What about us? Are we ripe with the ways of thinking that we're thinking today, the same way the fascists used to think, and I've always thought, are we ripe for fascism today? By the way, folks, you can read a great article that we posted on our website called The New Fascists. Our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section. You'll find this article by our guest in this hour, Dr. Gene Edward Veith. The website address, issuesetc.org. The name of the article, The New Fascists. When we come back, we're going to talk about Islamofascism. Is America ripe with civil religion, some jingoism, racism, socialism, paganism, and postmodern thought? Is America ripe for fascism? We'll be right back.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Next week on Issues Etc., we'll be discussing early church fathers and the Reformation solas. You know them, grace alone, faith alone, Christ alone, scripture alone. Pastor Will Whedon will be our guest, pastor of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Hamel, Illinois. Did the early church fathers reject those solas of the Reformation? Should the church today disregard the writings of the early church fathers? Were they just theological primitives? Or were they just Roman Catholics? We'll talk about it next week on Issues Etc. with Pastor Will Whedon. Now, if you'd like to know what we'll be discussing on the program for the rest of July, check out our website, issuesetc.org. While you're there, be sure to find out more about our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Modern Fascism, The Threat to the Judeo-Christian Worldview, written by our guest in this hour, Dr. Gene Edward Veith. Now, you can browse before you buy the book. Our website address, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section. Modern Fascism, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, costs $17.99 plus shipping and handling. You can also call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. When you call, make sure you mention Issues Etc. and our Book of the Month for July, Modern Fascism. Ed, with a few minutes and just a few questions before we wrap up our conversation, is America, with its postmodern mindset, its disregard for life, both in the way it thinks and in the way it makes its laws, its nationalism sometimes bordering on jingoism, the socialist element in our economy, the popularity of paganism, is America ripe for fascism?
Well, it could be. We're in a struggle. We fought World War II, and we defeated the enemy armies, but you can't really defeat ideas that easily, if you want to put it that way, and those ideas are still very much part of our culture today, and we've been in denial. We haven't faced up to them or what they are and what they lead to. Now, one of the things that's important to remember, though, is that conservatism in America is more like the opposite of fascism today. I mean, anyone who believes in a limited government can't be a fascist. The fascists believe the government that controls literally everything. Anyone that believes in a free market economy is not a national socialist. That's the opposite. Anyone who believes that Christianity should be part of the public square, part of the debate, that's anti-fascist. And so that's one thing we need to realize, how the opponents, and often those from, they're the ones often coming from a fascist perspective, though they don't realize it, have completely muddied the water. And I don't think that the issue is going to come from patriotism, in that it's usually the conservatives who hold the importance of patriotism. As we think about 4th of July, but the kind of patriotism that honors the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, that is not going to be fascism. There's not going to be a danger from that direction. The direction, or the danger, comes from the direction of the avant-garde, from the what we call the left wing. But more than that, it's a cultural phenomenon that is really a worldview phenomenon. As we look at our the ideas that are in currency, they tend to support a fascist model rather than the free society that we often take for granted. As we look at the popular mind, that's one of the things the fascists wanted to do, was to build a popular culture, to unite everyone using entertainment and spectacles and film and all of these things, to get everybody together and to manipulate them by their passions. You look at a lot of our popular culture today, it goes in that very same direction. Now, again, I don't think it has to happen. I think that our American heritage, where we see being American not in terms of a race or an ethnic group, but in terms of commitment to certain ideals about freedom and equality and the like, that's an important bulwark against fascism. And we need to, I think, cultivate that and to lift that up and to protect that. I think we need to come back to a biblical view of life and all that implies. So many of our churches have succumbed not only to the anti-doctrinal approach, but the idea that religion is just a matter of your feeling and, you know, whipping up the crowds into this big emotional kind of feeling. That's something that the Nazis, again, looked to, too. They wanted to make religion not transcendent, but immanent. In other words, in the here and the now, and have nothing to do with any kind of objective truth claims.
What you've been saying there, Ed, raises two questions very quickly. First of all, Michael Moore has come out with a film, so-called documentary, Fahrenheit 9/11, where a lot of the ideas we've been talking about are put forth. Are his ideas fascist?
Well, I'd have to know more about his ideas than I do to say that, but it would seem to be so. See, what he's doing in that film is literally a construction. He's taking a bit of film here, a bit of film there, a bit of another clip here, taking completely out of context and building them into something that then looks like it has some kind of, you know, explain it, that explains what happens with Bush in Iraq. All these conspiracy theories that he's churning out. Again, that was another trait of the fascists, actually. I don't know if he's a fascist, but his thinking cannot get out of that fascist trap where truth is beyond just what he constructs. And so it is a piece of propaganda. It's a piece of political propaganda. And again, the masters of that were the Nazis in the 30s. And I would say what he's doing is very much in that same tradition that goes back through Goebbels.
Finally, and with only about a minute and a half to respond here, Ed, This last week, Saddam Hussein started the beginning of his trial. People would say, hey, fascism is dead. There you go, Islamofascism, we put it down again. In the 40s, it was put down. Why should Christians in the 21st century, why should they be concerned about fascism?
Well, there's a military component, there's a political component, but there's also a spiritual component to fascism. And in many ways, even, you know, this war on terrorism has such a deep religious connection that there are spiritual issues involved, and ultimately it keeps coming back to the role of the scriptures in our civilization, in the way we think, and most importantly of all, of course, in our spiritual lives. And fascism, in almost every point, wants to undermine that and has an alternative for it. In fact, I think fascism may be more natural to human beings, certainly than something that rests on the scriptures. The whole pagan mindset is what most people throughout history have been under. And it's not, of course, liberating. It's very oppressive and very cruel. The ancient Greeks exposed their children, practiced euthanasia and abortion and homosexuality in a most overt way. But Christianity liberated us from all of that, from the paganism, certainly from the spiritual bondage, but also it had manifestations in the whole culture and in the way we were free to live.
Folks, if you'd like to know how to contact Dr. Gene Edward Veith, our guest, and the Cranach Institute, or if you'd like to become an Issues Etc. lay representative for your local Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation, or if you'd like to make a tax-deductible gift to help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc., no gift is too small. Our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, or write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Dr. Gene Edward Veith, thank you very much for being our guest.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Dr. Gene Edward Veith is culture editor for World Magazine. He's director of the Cranach Institute, and he's author of several books, including our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Modern Fascism. He's absolutely right. What is fascism but just the fisheye view of fallen man? It comes naturally to us. What is the answer? More missiles, more guns, more military conquests? No. The answer lies right where Dr. Veith says it does. In God's Word, and the one of whom God's Word speaks so clearly, Jesus Christ, who sets us free not only from the constraints of politics, but from sin and death by His death and resurrection. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.